Ms. Jennifer Sanders will represent the appellant, Mr. Brian Rutherford will represent the athlete.
Why don't you start out by telling us what MERS is?
I can do that, Your Honor.
And how they actually held title.
I will attempt to do that, Your Honor. Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Sanders. May it please the court. I'm here today representing Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, otherwise commonly known as MERS. In reference to the court's question as to what is MERS, MERS is a bookkeeping entry that basically holds title to the property. They're not a note holder.
How?
They hold legal title
to
the property.
How?
They hold legal title to the property, Your Honor. In most deeds of trust, they are specifically named as a nominee or a beneficiary to the deed of trust.
What does that mean? Does that vest title in you?
It vests legal title in the sense that, Your Honor, that they are able to assign the interests.
Title can only vest one place.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling us that the note holder, by putting this in their beneficiary or something, no longer holds title. They don't have standing to do anything. They don't own title.
They do have standing, Your Honor. However,
but they don't have the title.
They do have standing, Your Honor. However, should they name MERS as a nominee or
yes.
a beneficiary,
yes.
it gives MERS the ability to take legal title to the property and to do the same actions that the original note holder has.
Do they have title to the property?
They did, Your Honor.
They did.
Now,
so the original note holder did not.
The original note holder did and named MERS as a beneficiary.
And that made MERS the title holder, and the original note holder didn't hold it anymore. No title.
Well, there is a difference, Your Honor, actually, between having an interest in the property and actually having the note. I mean, as we all know, there's a note. When we buy a property, there's a note.
What interest did you have in the property?
MERS had the interest of being the nominee and the beneficiary to take legal actions on behalf of that property. In fact, the Texas Property Code specifically allows a bookkeeping entry such as MERS to not only foreclose on the property, but to take the other actions such as assignments and so on and so forth. Your Honor, of course, none of those issues are actually here before the court today. But MERS is a bookkeeping entry, and a bookkeeping entry under the Texas Property Code is specifically allowed to foreclose on a property.
Okay.
Now, getting to my argument, Your Honors, of course, we're here today on a motion for new trial that was overruled by operation of law by the underlying court. I was present for that hearing and participated in that hearing at the trial court level. As we all know, there's a liberal trend toward the granting of motion for new trials. As we've stated in our brief, MERS.
Liberal what word?
Trend.
Okay, I'm not aware of that, but okay.
It's stated in the Limestone Construction, Inc. versus Summit Commercial Industry Properties case.
There's a liberal trend to do over?
A liberal trend towards the granting of a motion for new trial if the factors set forth in the Craddock test are met. Now, it is our contention that MERS did meet the factors of the Craddock test. Specifically, MERS did not have notice of this lawsuit. And the evidence established at the trial court showed that their failure to answer was not intentional, nor was it the result of conscious indifference.
And you're going to talk to us about the 18 months or 24 months of not accepting green cards.
I most certainly am, Your Honor. The evidence submitted at the trial court level consisted of only evidence submitted by MERS, two affidavits submitted by MERS, which I'm sure the court has apparently already read, and the affidavits of John Murphy and William Holtman. The only evidence presented at the trial court level at that hearing by Mr. DeSanti in this case was the certificate of service and the green card submitted by the Texas Secretary of State. There were no controverting affidavits submitted at all by the plaintiff in that underlying suit. There was not an evidentiary hearing, and it is very important for this court to know that the underlying court did not make any findings of fact, they did not make any conclusions of law, and they simply let the motion be overruled by operation of law. There's no order denying the motion for new trial. And the only evidence we have, of course, you know, other than our simple knowledge that it's overruled within a certain time frame, is the docket entry that the court entered an entry on May 25th overstating that it was over, the motion for new trial was overruled. However, what's important about that is that the notice of appeal was filed on May 21st. So that docket entry was not made until 4 days after our notice of appeal was filed with the trial court.
Okay, we know that service is complete upon service of the register of the Secretary of State. So
yes.
Where do we go from there?
Where we go from there is very simple, Your Honor. MERS affidavits, and the only evidence before the trial court to consider is that they did not receive service.
Of course, I cannot receive service by refusing service.
Well,
so there's more to it than I didn't receive service.
There is more to it, Your Honor. In fact, Mr. Holtman's affidavit goes into great detail.
What I'm talking about is, I'm hearing, where, from our standpoint, what are we looking at? Service is complete upon service upon the Secretary of State. You're saying that I didn't get it. And so that's all that matters. I didn't get it, so service was on the Secretary of State is not enough. So I'm asking you, what do we look at? Is it good cause? Is it reasonable explanation? What are we looking at between the disconnect between services complete upon service of the Secretary of State and you're saying I didn't get it?
I understand, Your
what's
Honor.
In there?
And you're right, and the court's exactly correct. MERS just saying I didn't get served and I didn't know about the suit is not enough.
Right.
What MERS has to then do is show that its failure to answer that lawsuit was not intentional and was not the result of conscious indifference.
Okay, but you intentionally didn't take green cards for, I don't remember how many months.
Well, actually, if the court wants to believe the arguments put forth by Mr. DeSanti, which are that just simply that, arguments and
no
inferences. Pardon me?
Are you saying that's outside the record?
No. It's not outside the record. But what is also in the record is an explanation of that timeline. And if you carefully read those affidavits, it states that it became aware of this problem in October of 2008. And if you follow along the timeline, that affidavit also goes on to say that in the year 2009 and throughout the year 2009, MERS was working with its United Post Office to try to fix this situation. They were also of the opinion and had been told that mail was being returned as undeliverable. And, Your Honor, if the mail had been returned as undeliverable, we wouldn't even be here today if that was the case. And that was the impression that MERS was under, is that the mail was being returned undeliverable.
How would that change it? If it's undeliverable, you didn't get it, and service was complete on the Secretary of State.
Well, actually, that's not correct, Your Honor. Service is complete if the Texas Secretary of State effectuates that service. Now, if that green card is returned to the Texas Secretary of State marked undeliverable, I think we have a different story here. And I think the Texas Secretary of State then has an obligation, or the plaintiff has an obligation, to provide another address. The affidavit also states that there are two other addresses at which MERS actually receives the bulk of its mail.
It's your obligation to keep the Secretary of State informed where you can be served. So let's just say you left, you moved. Well, mm-hmm. I think that the Secretary of State would get it back and it said undeliverable because you're not there anymore. Well, service is complete. It's not up to the Secretary of State to see that they have the correct address. It's your responsibility to see that the Secretary of State has an address at which you can be served.
Well,
which apparently in this case, I'm not throwing darts or anything, you understand, but you didn't do. You did not provide the Secretary of State with an address where they could serve you. Seems like that's the bottom line right there. And if you were accepting service at these two other locations, you could have given them that address.
Well, Your Honor, if I can answer your question, number one, I'm not aware of any obligation on the part of MERS to keep the Secretary of State informed about its addresses. I'm not aware of any obligation
now,
of that.
Secretary
in fact,
the State going to forward the information to you because it's complete on service of the Secretary of State, and then the Secretary of State relies on the information that it has and turns around and sends it to you.
Well, I understand, Your Honor. What we don't get past is there still has to be an intent to evade an intent not to answer this lawsuit. The question here is not whether or not MERS was negligent in handling its mail, because negligence isn't the standard here. And the appellee points out in its response that, well, maybe MERS was negligent in handling its mail. Maybe it was, but that's not the standard here.
I think the question may be, were you served? Because you were served upon completion of the Secretary of State. And this is just my view as we talk. The fact that you didn't provide an address to the Secretary of State to get receipt in your hands of the document is your fault. Just like you moved and you didn't tell the Secretary of State, hey, we have a new address or whatnot. There's no difference. I think it is your responsibility to keep the Secretary of State informed of address or have a registered agent of service in Texas where it can forward you the information. I mean, you disagree with that?
I would respectfully disagree. I believe that actually my client MERS didn't bring this lawsuit. So I don't believe that they had any affirmative duty to stay in touch with the Texas Secretary of State. In fact,
well, if that's true, then you would say if we moved, we don't need to tell the Secretary of State we've moved.
Well,
we don't have any duty there. How could that be?
Actually, Your Honor, a very quick answer is, anyone at all who simply goes to the MERS website and looks on it, it very clearly states, send all certified mail to our Ocala, Florida office. Very clear, plain as day, on its website. Maybe they should have, Your Honor, but that's not the question here. The question here is, did they have a duty to? And I don't believe there's any case that's in front of the court today for consideration stating that my client had a duty to keep the Secretary of State informed. And what's at issue here, I would propose to the court, is the issue is, even if that's the court's position, we still don't get past whether or not my client had an intent to not answer the lawsuit, or whether or not they showed any conscious indifference.
But the premise of that, is it not, is that you weren't served. We start out with, I wasn't served, right?
Well,
I wasn't served. But you were served. You were served by service of the Secretary of State. And it seems to me that because you have two choices. I can keep a registered agent for service in Texas,
mm-hmm.
or I can accept service through the Secretary of State, but I have an obligation to tell the Secretary of State how to serve me.
Your Honor, at issue, we're not here today arguing that MERS wasn't served. We're arguing that MERS did not know about the lawsuit. So part of the Craddock test is not whether or not a defendant was served. There are numerous Texas cases out there that have overruled motions for new trial where the defendants were served, but their failure to answer was not the result of conscious indifference. So that's where it leaves us. The test here is not whether or not the defendant was served. We know, according to the Texas Secretary of State, they affected service. So the question for the court is whether or not MERS showed any conscious indifference. And the only evidence, other than argument of counsel, submitted at the trial court were the affidavits submitted by MERS stating that they were not attempting to evade service. In fact, this is a company that receives mail on a daily basis. Their whole point here was to make sure that they were receiving their mail properly. And if you or I or any other business who does this on a regular basis receives this kind of mail, we would want that same privilege. We would want the opportunity to be able to inspect our mail and make sure that it was being delivered in the appropriate manner.
Certified mail was not being delivered to MERS home office address by the local post office and was being returned to the particular sender. Isn't that statement enough to show for an entity like MERS that you say is in the business of taking legal actions for on behalf of property owners, be enough to show conscious indifference?
Your Honor, I would submit to the court that no, that's not enough, coupled with the other information in the affidavit. And the case law is clear that once those affidavits are submitted and there's no other controverting evidence, there is no discretion, and it is an abuse of discretion of the lower trial court not to grant that motion for new trial. And in this case, there were no controverting affidavits. I know my light's on, Your Honor, so I want to just briefly address. There's two other issues that we've addressed, and they're very important ones also. Number one, that Mr. DeSanti never showed on the face of his petition that he was entitled to the judgment that he received. His petition says one thing. His judgment says another. His petition says declaratory judgment, and what was ultimately granted to him was a quiet title action. It wasn't properly pled, and the facts and the affidavit submitted in support of that default judgment certainly do not, on the face of them, give rise to a default judgment. Now, they've argued some mootness issues and other things like that, which we have addressed in our briefs, but I think the crux of what we are here today is what was presented as evidence at the trial court. And it's very important that the trial court did not make any determinations, did not ask any questions of counsel, and admitted those affidavits, may I have leave to finish that sentence, despite the fact that they had been objected to by the plaintiff in that hearing. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. I think the question, you're right, Justice McCoy, it's a two-stage question. Were they served? If not, then we looked credit. Service on the Secretary of State is service.
Her point is she's distinguishing service from notice. So you, I believe that's what you're saying. Would you address that?
Certainly. If
we were served through the Secretary of State, but we didn't receive notice.
If service is complete, and there are a variety of statutes, most of them that I've seen in the real estate context. If service is complete upon mailing, as it often is, then you're done. That's the end of the inquiry.
So you're just saying service is notice, and she's saying they're different.
But doesn't the Craddock test has been applied when a defendant has been served and for whatever reason has put the citation to the side of their desk and it's been buried and there has been service, and nonetheless, the defendant has come in and said that the failure to answer wasn't the result of conscious indifference.
That is exactly correct, and I can think of a particular case where that has happened. Out of state defendant is served.
So the service isn't dispositive then.
It is not dispositive. If you get to that point, if you've been served through the Secretary of State, you've had the opportunity to look at the thing, and you sent it back anyway. I would concede that you get into that second layer. If that's the question, you're going to get into that.
And what you're saying is we go to her point, which is, was there conscience? We were served.
Yes.
We didn't get notice. But was that because of conscious indifference, which you might say was not argued, not informing the Secretary of State, that your position would be was not informing the Secretary of State, had a contact?
Right.
So were you then conceding, yes, there was service, it's not notice, and we go to conscious indifference?
I'm not going to concede that, Judge. I would like to look at that issue. You asked the specific question about is there a case, the discussion was, is there a specific case? I do have a site I'd like to give the court. It's not in the brief. It's GFS Ventures, 934 Southwest 2nd, 813. That's out of Houston First, 1996. And that case says that certificates issued by the Secretary of State are received in all courts as prima facie evidence of the facts recited therein. I would want to look at that case further because I don't want to say it does directly address that point. My recollection is it did in that case. I would like to look at it and have the opportunity to address that issue with the court.
What point are you making to the case?
Say that again.
Service is notice.
My recollection of this case is service is notice. I wrote in my notes a different proposition, but my recollection of that case is that service is notice. But if MERS chooses to do business in Texas, it is required to provide a registered agent. That's in the Texas Business and Commerce Code. They got to do it. If you want to do business here, if you want to file lawsuits, if you want to, you know, file liens, file assignments, conduct foreclosures, you're going to need to let somebody know where you are. And we have a procedure to do that. Under Craddock, there are two elements that are really at issue. The first is conscious indifference, then the second is meritorious defense. There is no evidence in this appellate record that MERS ever held title to this property. There's no evidence of assignment. If they had gone and filed those things with the county clerk like they're supposed to, surely they would have stuck that in the appellate record so that this court could look at it and say, ah, there's a meritorious defense. They were the assignee. They were the title holder. They had some right. It's undisputed that DeSanti served the Secretary of State, and then that was the petition was forwarded on via certified mail to MERS. If a business of this size that chooses to do business in Texas ignores certified mail for 16 months, I think that that is conscious indifference, just black and white. There is no case that says that. There is no case one way or the other that says 16 months, ignoring your mail, not doing anything with the post office, because sometimes law isn't in the law books. It's so blatant and common sense that no court ever needs to say, you got to pick up your certified mail. For an individual, I'm sorry, Judge.
Going outside the record a little bit on ignoring the post office, ignoring your mail.
Actually, looking at Clerk's Record 60, that's the Holtman affidavit that Justice Walker referred to, we decided that our mailroom personnel could not accept certified mail this way. I think that's black and white.
Or certainly enough to give the trial court discretion to determine that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a determination that the trial court could make based on this affidavit.
If there's a duty by MERS to keep the Secretary of State informed as how to serve them.
I think that's...
Oh, I know what you think, but I mean, are there any... That's just common sense. That's Bob or common sense. But that doesn't go anywhere. Are you aware of any statutes? I mean, I would think there was a statute that talks about... You're not going to have a registered agent for Texas. What you need to do?
Candidly, Judge, I looked at that issue over the a day ago, and I looked at cases that cited a repealed version of the Texas Business and Commerce Code, the old Corporations Act, and there was a statute. It was sunsetted in 2010, January 1st, 2010, and I don't yet know what the new law is. There is a new law that replaced
but
it.
Would
but
be operating under that law?
We would be operating under that law.
Whatever that says.
It was yes, sir. It was Business Corporations Act, Chapter 2, 2.01 and following,
okay,
under the old cases.
There was a duty.
Yes, sir.
And they breached their duty. Whoops, that's negligence. And I don't think negligence is conscious indifference.
And I agree with that. It is not. And that's why I think we need, just looking at the Holtman affidavit gets us there. We decided that our mailroom personnel could not accept certified mail this way. That is an affirmative act. It goes well beyond negligence. It was intent. They decided to do it. That's what they did. They did it for 16 months. And these are the consequences, candidly. Mr. DeSanti, and I'm sure the court gleaned this from the pleadings and the briefing, he's not walking away with clear title to a piece of property. I would agree that the order that the trial judge signed is not a model of clarity, but it does extinguish MERS interest, whatever it may be. And that was the lawsuit that Mr. DeSanti brought, was a declaratory judgment action to say that this individual, this nominee, whatever that is, he didn't have any right. It does not declare the rights of First Horizon Home Loans, who was the person that Linda Leal signed the deed of trust with. That entity is still out there. And, in fact, Mr. DeSanti pled in his declaratory judgment, we need to know who to pay. We know we need to pay somebody. We know we're not the first person out there. There is somebody. We just want to be sure that MERS isn't it. And that was the relief that the trial court afforded. There is an interpleader in this case. There is somebody who stepped in. And I don't know at this point, no idea if they're with First Horizon Homes, if they're an assignee. The record doesn't reflect that.
I'm sorry. Off the top of my head, it sounds like DeSanti tenders the money into the registry of the court, lets the claimants come forward. Isn't that an interpleader or is that an impleader?
It would be an impleader. That's correct. We don't know what dollar amount is owed. We don't know what amount to pay. And that is certainly an issue that's still hanging out there, and Mr. DeSanti will have to address that if he intends to keep the property. But as to MERS, the declaratory judgment sought a declaration of what are MERS rights. Does MERS have any? should they need to come forward and show the validity of whatever rights they have. They failed to do that. They don't have anything in this appellate record that would show the court that they own the property, have an assignment into the property, have any rights to the property. And so for the trial court properly granted the default judgment on that basis.
Can I suggest you address the declaratory judgment quiet title question?
Yes, sir. We are not seeking to quiet title. We're not seeking an absolute removal of all first filed liens, anybody that's ahead of us in the chain of title. We're not saying that DeSanti is it. We are asking, okay, what is a beneficiary? Do they have any rights? Is there any validity to their rights? Yes or no. We're not seeking an adjudication of the complete title. We're not seeking to walk away with clear title. We're solely asking for an adjudication of what is this entity under the deed of trust? Do they have any standing to come in here or not? Standing's a bad word. Do they have any rights to come in here or not? And trespass to try title, if we were going to address First Horizon Home Loans, any other entity that might be out there, that would be the proper means to do that.
Well, it just kind of sounds like to me what you're saying is if we're going to address all of the potential claimants to the property, we call it quieting title, and if we're only going to address part of the potential claimants to the property, we call it a declaratory judgment. That doesn't, here we go, Bob, or common sense again, that doesn't sound right.
I would argue that declaratory judgment may be used for that purpose. And we have cited cases in the brief that address the difference between trespass tri title and declaratory judgment. And again, TTT is to walk away with a piece of paper at the end of the day that says you own the thing. And then maybe there are these other people after you in line, maybe there aren't. That's not what Mr. DeSanti asked for. That's not what he got. He asked for a very limited declaration of this deed of trust. What does it mean with respect to MERS being a nominee? And he got an adjudication of that. The TTT may be a separate action, but that's not before the court. It's not part of this record. So with that, we'd ask the court to affirm the judgment of the trial court. Justice McCoy, you look troubled. Is there anything else I can address? Thank you, sir.
Certainly, Your Honor. Your Honor, the interest in the property, as I stated before, is set forth when MERS is named as a nominee and a beneficiary in the deed of trust. That deed of trust was attached as an exhibit to our motion for new trial. When opposing counsel referred to the intervener action and the court questioned whether or not this should have been an impleader or what the case was, as our briefs points out, MetLife was the actual holder of the note, and the interest in that deed of trust had been assigned to MetLife, who filed an intervention in the underlying case. That intervention was not allowed to proceed forward because the motion for new trial was overruled as an operation by law. So in the interest of justice, if the court determines that the motion for new trial should not have been granted, then this case goes back down. And if it goes back down to the trial court level, the MERS would be substituting MetLife for it, because MetLife is the real party here. They're the real party in interest. They're the actual note holder who the plaintiff did not sue in its underlying action. I know that the court is a little hung up on this service issue, and I would just submit to the court that MERS never contested whether or not it was served. It was not briefed in our brief to the court. MERS never contested whether or not it was served, and the statutes that pertain to service of process through the Texas Secretary of State. Instead, MERS's contention here is that there was no conscious indifference, and that is what the underlying court has to consider, especially in this case, in a case like this, where there was no evidence to the contrary. Now, had Mr. DeSanti wanted to put forth some evidence, put forth an affidavit of his own, or even, as in fact, there's a very important case that opposing counsel cites in their reply brief. It's the Catton case. It's not important in my terms because it's an unpublished decision, but it's the sole case that opposing counsel relies on in their brief to show that there was some sort of conscious indifference. And they, in the Catton case, in that case, it was serviced through the Texas Secretary of State. Now, opposing counsel misstates the holding of that case. What they want the court to believe is that the holding of that case said that any time that service was returned by the Texas Secretary of State and it was marked refused, that that showed a conscious indifference. But that's not what the holding of the Catton case was. In that Catton case, the court held, after weighing the evidence that was submitted in front of it, that the plaintiff had submitted enough controverting evidence to outweigh the affidavits that were submitted by the defendant. And in that case, the court specifically held an evidentiary hearing. And not only did the court have the evidence from the Texas Secretary of State, but the court also had evidence of testimony from a process server who went even further to say, I think these people are trying to evade service. MERS here simply says to the court, we were not trying to evade service. We were trying to get our mail the correct way. And ultimately, the affidavit says that when the post office decided to address that issue, it was resolved. And the post office specifically directed the postman and said, look, they're entitled to review their certified mail in the way that it's supposed to be properly delivered. And you, postman, have to sit there and wait and allow them the opportunity to review it. Now, that evidence before the court is not controverted here.
But here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that Mr. DeSanti had no burden to come forward with controverting evidence until the movement came forward with evidence on every element of the Craddock test. And so if the affidavit that you're relying on is the one that I mentioned that says from October 2008 to February 2010, they were not having their certified mail delivered. That seems to me that it gives enough wiggle room to the trial court that it would not be an abuse of discretion for the trial court to determine that that shows intentional or conscious indifference.
Well, I know my time's running out, so if I may have leave to answer your question. Your Honor, actually, the court says that you may only, the underlying cases state that you may only make reasonable inferences if conscious indifference is shown. And the underlying court, they didn't make any determinations that there were conscious indifference. They accepted and admitted those affidavits into testimony. And if there is any basis at all for showing that it wasn't just negligence, that it wasn't just negligence here, then the court has no choice but to grant the motion for new trial. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Your case is submitted.